Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and it's our great honor today to have with us our brand new Congresswoman, Sarah Jacobs. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, well, we're here to talk about that really uneventful first month that you've had back there in Congress.
Yes, not exactly the first month I had anticipated for myself.
I can imagine. Well, I mean, I have to ask, what was it like to be back there as a freshman congressional member, in the midst of the Capitol insurrection, the attack on the U.S. Capitol that occurred on January 6th?
So I was in the House chamber in the gallery, which is the balcony that overlooks the House floor. Normally, members of Congress don't sit up there, but because of COVID, they were distancing us. So I was one of about 20 or 30 members who were up there, and I'd been so honored to be chosen as one of the members to sit there during the opening of the proceedings. And I remember getting some alerts on my phone that some of the buildings were being evacuated. And my parents texted me, starting to see stuff on TV, on the news, very worried.
And it must have been terrifying for both for you and for them.
Yeah. And I texted them back, "Don't worry, I'm in the House chamber. It's the safest place I could be." But turns out I was wrong. So we heard the mob behind us. We could hear the gunshot.
Wow.
We ended up having to hide under our seats to put emergency evacuation hoods on that are basically gas masks, and ended up evacuating, having to climb over chairs and under railings.
Wow. And we've since learned that some of the insurrectionists were communicating with each other on walkie-talkies, talking about gassing members of Congress in the tunnels that were being used to evacuate them. So it's really chilling. This was far beyond a protest, obviously, over, you know, objections to how the voting turned out in the presidential election. So one of your first acts in Congress, your very first House speech on January 13th, was to call for the impeachment of then-President Donald Trump. Can you tell us your reasons for that?
Yeah, as soon as I got back to my office from the safe room on January 6th, I talked with my team and decided to call for impeachment. My background, as you and many of your listeners know, is working in conflict settings, working actually on post-coup transitions. And I know from that experience that you have to hold accountable anyone who encourages, incites, or commits an act of violence at the first time it happens, or
right,
else you're much more likely to get future incidents of violence. So I felt like it was very important that we held Donald Trump accountable for what he did and impeached him. And I'm very glad that we were able to do that.
Yeah. You also have a resolution calling for censure of Marjorie Taylor Greene, the new congresswoman who, among other things, was tweeting and posting calls for the assassination of Speaker Pelosi and other members of Congress.
That's right. I think it's important that we hold Marjorie Taylor Greene accountable as well. I'm glad that we voted to remove her from her committees. I think that her behavior, her actions, her rhetoric goes well beyond normal political disagreement into the area that is simply unacceptable when you are a public figure. And so I think it's important that we show officially on the record with a formal House censure that this is not appropriate behavior by a member of Congress.
Okay. Another of your early votes was for a budget resolution that should make it easier to pass a COVID-19 relief bill. And I will say, when I've been asking our readers and listeners, what should we ask, you know, a member of Congress I'm going to be interviewing, everybody wants to know, what's the status on the COVID relief? Who can expect to get relief checks and when? So what do you know about that?
All very good questions. So there's two parallel tracks going on right now. So there is a track where we're working on trying to negotiate a bipartisan bill that would be able to get 60 votes in the Senate and be filibuster proof.
Mm-hmm.
Those negotiations are not going that well, truthfully. Mm. And simultaneously, we're working on a budget reconciliation bill that would only need 50 votes in the Senate, but somewhat constrains what we're able to do because it has to pass a series of tests to make it eligible for budget reconciliation.
Right. So that means that it could be passed with Democratic votes only if need be. What are the constraints? What can you not do in that bill that you could do if you had a few Republican votes?
So the major constraint is that anything you do in a budget reconciliation bill has to be its primary purpose having an effect on the budget. So you can't do anything that's considered policymaking that doesn't have a budgetary impact. And even if it has a budgetary impact, but the primary purpose is policymaking, that would not necessarily be eligible. And many of you have probably heard that there is currently conversation going on as to whether or not some things like raising the minimum wage would be considered eligible for budget reconciliation. And that will be something that the parliamentarian will have to rule on.
Right. So that might have to be considered separately. What about the $1,400 relief checks that President Biden has been pushing for, which, of course, is on top of the $600 relief checks that already went out or were approved under the Trump administration?
Yes. So this week and next week, the House is doing our markup of the budget, and then we will send it to the Senate, and then they will do their process and vote on it. So we're hoping to get this done as fast as possible. And these checks are part of what's being negotiated right now. I personally think we should send as big a check as possible to as many people as possible. We know folks are really struggling. And as we look at a place like San Diego with the high cost of living, you know, it's clear that many people need much more assistance than just $1,400. But it's a good start. Mm-hmm. It's important. And I'm hopeful we'll have that anyone who received a previous check will be eligible to receive this check as well.
Well, that's good. A lot of people have been asking about the small businesses and whether what is in the relief package, if anything, to help the small businesses that have been really struggling with the shutdowns.
Yes, we know. And I actually, when I was back in district 2 weeks ago now, I toured a number of small businesses and talked with folks about what they're going through. We're working to include expanded PPP, more support through the Small Business Administration, also streamlining some of the rules, making sure we're actually getting that money out to small businesses with the right kind of oversight that we need. So I'm hopeful that all of that is going to end up in the final package. And I know our Small Business Committee is working really hard on that right now.
Very good. You are also co-sponsoring the Paycheck Protection Act for Women, which originally was introduced by Susan Davis, who, of course, held this office before you did. What do you think the odds are of it finally passing now that, you know, control of the Senate has flipped?
You know, I definitely think it's going to pass the House. We have a lot of support, and I know it's something that a lot of people feel very strongly about. I'm hopeful we'll get enough Republicans on board that it will be able to pass the Senate without a filibuster.
Super. And for those who may not be familiar with it, what's the thumbnail description of what the bill would do?
Basically make sure that women are paid equally for their work.
Hard to believe in the 21st century, we're still arguing this over 100 years after we got the right to vote, isn't it? We should all be paid equally.
Really?
You have snagged some pretty major committee assignments, including the House Armed Services Committee that Susan Davis used to serve on, as well as Congressman Hunter, our two East County former representatives, and also the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, among others. Tell us how that's going and if there's anything, you know, any key goals or legislation moving through there that you think our audience should know about.
Absolutely. I'm deeply honored that I was appointed to these two committees. They're very prestigious, and we've got a lot of work to do. On foreign affairs, my main priority is working with the Biden administration to rebuild America's standing around the world and making sure that as we're doing that, we're doing it in a way that actually addresses the challenges we're facing right now and in the future, and not just recreating the alliances and institutions that we had in the past. And on armed services, I sit on the military personnel subcommittee, and I will be working primarily on child care for military families and addressing childhood poverty among military families, which, if we're able to address, will actually go a long way in reducing our childhood poverty in San Diego County.
Very good. It's just shocking that, you know, the families of our military men and women, many of them are living below the poverty threshold. I think a lot of people may not be aware of that.
That's right. And even before COVID, there were about 39,000 members of military families who visited the food bank every single month.
Wow. Speaking of people in need, I understand that on your last visit here, you met with local advocates for the homeless, including homeless people who are living along the San Diego riverbed. What's in the works to help them?
Yeah, so I visited the San Diego riverbed and the really innovative partnership that the San Diego River Foundation and PATH have formed to work together to help people who are experiencing homelessness and living unsheltered in the riverbed, both as a humanitarian issue and also as an ecological issue. Mm-hmm. So we're working to make sure that in this relief package, there is rental assistance and homeowners assistance, that we're extending the eviction moratorium and keeping people in their homes. And also that we are creating more supports to organizations that are serving people who are experiencing homelessness. And then we'll be working more on further legislation to address the homelessness crisis in San Diego and across our country.
Very good. Back to budget issues for just a moment. We've heard a lot of big plans from Democrats on ways to help a lot of people. Obviously, some of those come with pretty big price tags, but what are your thoughts about, if we don't want to just grow the deficit forever, what are some ways that you might envision to bring more revenue in or cut expenses somewhere else to help address the fiscal concerns?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's really important to say that the most important thing we can do for our economy right now is spend the money we need to spend to get through this crisis and stimulate our economy. Because as we saw in 2009, if we don't do a big enough stimulus, we'll actually end up with a bigger deficit because of the sluggish growth and therefore lower tax revenue base that we'll have.
Yeah, or businesses close, then they're not paying, sales tax or income tax revenues and so forth.
Exactly. But I also think that we need to reverse the 2017 Republican tax bill that gave a tax giveaway to people who didn't need it and added trillions to our deficit without growing our economy. So,
and we're talking, millionaires and up on that. Is that correct?
Or?
Yeah. So it's not, the average person is not going to be affected by that.
So, although we do also want to work on repealing the cap on the SALT deduction that was in that bill, which I know is affecting so many San Diego families.
I'm sorry, which deduction?
The state and local tax deduction.
Oh, okay. All right. I think we've covered all of the questions that I came in with, Congresswoman. Listeners, if you tuned in late, we're speaking with Congresswoman Sarah Jacob, our newly elected representative, whose district includes not only San Diego, but much of East County here. What else would you like our audience to know that I haven't specifically asked you about today?
Well, I think the main thing is that I know that this last month and this last year has been really difficult for a lot of people, and it's hard to see a way out. I'm heartened that vaccine distribution is continuing to ramp up and that we will soon be able to get lots more vaccines distributed. I know that watching the violence on January 6th for a lot of people was really difficult. And so everyone should make sure that you're doing what you need to do to take care of yourself, that you're talking to someone if you need to, but also that you all should know that I will be working every single day, every single hour, making sure that while this is our present, this will not be our future. And we are going to get through this. We are going to come out on the other side, and we're going to build the future that we all want together.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule back there in Washington, D.C. to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.